Because it's really interesting. I keep coming back to like, kind of, yeah, coming back into the promotion of the record and finishing the record and like reminding myself of promoting records again. And I look back on all the email threads and the dates are like 2022. And I'm like, oh God.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer weiteren Ausgabe vom All You Can Eat Interview Podcast. Mein Name ist Lele Lukas und ich bringe euch heute ein Interview mit Carlos. Das zweite Interview mit dem guten Carlos. Das erste Mal habe ich mit dem Sänger von Low Island gesprochen, als das vorherige Album rausgekommen ist. Jetzt, heute, habe ich die ganze Zeit vor dem Schneiden, nach dem Schneiden, das neue Album der Band Bird gehört und sehr genossen. Sie spielen am 1.11. in Berlin, aber hier ist erstmal ein jetzt schon wieder relativ altes Gespräch, wir haben Anfang April gesprochen, über das neue Album und wie es zustande gekommen ist und vieles, vieles mehr. Wir machen auch einen literarischen Abstecher, alles mit dabei. Viel Spaß! Last time, you introduced yourself. And looking at you being, I think, what was it, a quarter Portuguese, something like that?
Ah, okay, half Colombian. Yes, yeah, half Colombian. Yeah,
sorry,
that's
sorry for
me.
Mixing.
No,
that
no, that's okay. No, that's no problem. Yeah, half my dad is Colombian. Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. What has been added? Like you still sing in Low Island, but I assume in the last 2 years there's you're more or different. Who are you now?
Who am I now? Okay, well, I'm still half Colombian. That hasn't changed. But who am I now? That's a really nice question. Since then, so we wrote this and recorded this album over the course of 2 years. But in that time, lots has changed for lots of different people in the band. Starting with me, I moved to London. Uh-huh. In that time, I also finished a master's in cultural studies at Goldsmiths University, which is in London. And then for other members of the band, I mean, it's crazy the amount of things that have happened, really. I'll speak about the positive things. One got married. Two got married, but definitely one got married in the process of writing this album, and one had their first child.
Oh, nice.
In the process of writing this album. We're very different people from the previous time we would have spoken, which was after the second album, right? 2022 is second album. Yeah,
yes.
That's our second album.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So no, things have changed a lot, but then also things have stayed the same. We're still writing music together in the same studio in Oxford, but this time round we recorded in different places. And I think that was a big change as well for the group. Was we worked with a producer, which maybe we talk about later on. We worked with a producer for a whole album, which is the first time we'd done that. We recorded, you know, in an actual studio. In the previous two records, we made a studio, kind of makeshift studio. So that was a big change for the band. Lots of things have changed, but lots of things have stayed the same. There's a book called The Leopard, I think, where the famous quotation is things have to change in order to stay the same. And I think in a band, for the band to keep going, lots of things need to change in order that the band keeps going.
Yeah, it's a weird, I assume that is also for a band a weird thing, because I don't know, people expect certain things from a band, and then when the band changes through natural things, the band's output changes as well in certain ways, I bet.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and I think the acts, there are lots of different examples of acts who approach their kind of trajectory in different ways, aren't there?
Yeah.
Some people keep making quite similar stuff, or they find their kind of niche and they live in that. I think about that often more in terms of film directors, actually. Like, I think about Wes Anderson, and I'm like, it feels like his films are a variation on a theme.
Yes.
Whereas there are other, you know, directors who maybe try to reinvent themselves or make different types of films, and the same. And I think that's really true of artists. You know, if I think about, I don't know, the Arctic Monkeys in the last few records, it feels like they have changed a lot. They're not just kind of, you know, doing variations on the same theme. And I personally am really drawn. I'm drawn to both. Like, I love a band like Fleet Foxes, who I feel like they, or Big Thief, they find a sound and they live in that sound within various parameters. But I also love bands like Radiohead and Arctic Monkeys, who are kind of up for changing things up and finding new ways of expressing the group, the sound of the group. And I think our band is a bit like that. We don't like sitting still. Once we've kind of made a certain type of song, we're like, okay, well, we've made that type of song, why would we make it again? And I'm sure that's really frustrating for listeners. I think I get that impression that everyone's like, yeah, I really like that like song or those few songs, you know, and I'd love to hear more of that stuff. And the band is often kind of by that point moved on.
I find myself, you know, having to like needing more time with the record that has a new and different way of doing things.
You find you have to kind of adjust to adjust what your expectations are.
And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Like if there's a band that you go that I find that I listen to for a very specific thing and then they don't do that anymore, then that becomes a different thing. There's only one song on the record where I'm like, this is what I wanted, and so this one stays and everything else just goes.
Yeah, I mean, well, we talked about that with this album. We talked about how could we have a song that was that kind of was a nod back to the previous Low Island material that was more similar to the previous work. Because this album, I think, you've only heard two songs, but the album is very different, I would say, to the second record, and it's very different to the... It's more similar, perhaps, to the first record, but it's still very different to the first record.
Yeah.
So we did talk about kind of having songs on the album that were kind of... Jamie always calls them the olive branch songs. the songs that reach out to the fans of the previous record and say, don't worry, we're still doing this as well.
Okay.
You know, so there's at least one song, perhaps two, I would say, on this record that say, you know, if you really like the kind of more electronic side of Low Island, for example, like we haven't left it behind. But it's definitely moved in a new direction as well. It's interesting to see how people feel about that, because sometimes in the band you think, oh my god, we've done this like radically different thing and it's crazy, and then everyone's like, yes, sounds like Low Island to me. And you're like, oh, cool.
Is that a good moment or a bad moment?
I think, if I'm honest, for me, it's a bad moment. I think for me, I'm like, we've done something really radical, and that for me is exciting. Yeah. And then someone's like, no, this just sounds like you guys. Like when we sent the album to the label, who we thought was originally going to release the music, a label, I should say. The first track that, you know, I was like, you know, what's he going to say about this? Because it's very different. And he goes, well, yeah, the first track's just classic Low Island. And I was like, oh, okay.
Back to the drawing board.
Yeah. Can that? We're going to go 2 more years.
So this is why you're releasing on your own record label now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's an act of spite. Yeah, for sure.
So with the electronic expectations, let's say it that way, and the video for Spit It Out, which is a short aside, is would be very interesting as a Slipknot cover, but it is not. There is a lot of electronics on that screen in your little round.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you...
None of them being used.
Yeah. I if you said you used to build your own studio and then I assume you bring stuff, maybe you rent stuff. What was it like? And I don't know if that goes for you as well, for all four of you to go into a different place. And I mean, I saw pictures on Instagram. There's so much weird stuff standing around there. Did you just spend a week tinkering and looking at all the things and trying every knob that you could find? Or like, how much of a gearhead are you yourself, and what is it like to be surrounded by people who maybe are more of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Are you're talking about the studio we recorded or the In the Round video? Or both, perhaps.
They both go into each other. I assume that you feel more a lot than of stuff. One song in the round.
Exactly. So that gear does eventually get used, just not for that song.
Yeah.
And then in the studio recording, there's a lot of equipment. It's varying degrees in the band. Like, and I think over time, that has kind of maybe kind of delineated itself more clearly. I think I used to like the idea, for me personally, I used to like the idea that I was really into gear. And then I think I've come to terms with the fact that I'm actually not really much of a gearhead, and what I like is writing songs. And you know, I like creating moods and atmospheres and textures, but I use equipment as much as it serves me in the moment. Like, I'll just very quickly turn lots of knobs and plug things in, and the studio becomes a mess within about 5 minutes and nothing makes any sense. But once I get the sound, once I kind of create the mood or atmosphere that I'm after, that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
You'll never find me like reading the manual for a synth or anything like that. Whereas, Jamie, for example, in the band, who does kind of a lot of the additional production, he is the guy whose rig in the round video looks a bit like a spaceship. He plays guitar, does backing vocals. Both him and Felix, the drummer, have much more kind of intimate knowledge of gear. Felix, from a microphone perspective, has an amazing understanding of microphones and how to mic a drum kit and all that sort of stuff. And Jamie has an incredible understanding of synthesis and guitar pedals, and and also with software as well. He's, you know, I've never met someone who's so amazing at using Ableton, which is the software that we write a lot of the music or record a lot of our music into. And then me and Jacob, the bass player, we're more kind of song oriented, you know. We're more kind of, I mean, the other two wouldn't like it if I said that, probably. I think they also love songs, but they also have this added string to their bow of the gear. And I think me and the bass player are less that way inclined. And then add throw into that mix, we worked with Chris Taylor from Grizzly Bear producing the record, and he's like all of this stuff in one guy. He's got a really emotional connection with music and the songs, but he also has such an intimate knowledge of equipment. And this record in particular, there's a lot more guitars on this album, and Chris's understanding of amps and how to mic up amps and get different sounds out of the guitars. He brought like a mod, he lives in Barcelona, and he brought like this like thing that you can bring his hand luggage, like a suitcase, and it was just this, it looked like a kind of spaceship, battleship thing of modular units that he designed so that you could run anything through them. And so he would be like, you'd be playing the guitar and he'd be patching your guitar through like a filter on his modular rack, which would be then going into like a gate, which would be then going into, a, I don't know, a tape echo or whatever, and then going back into the amp. And he brought all of this knowledge and craft of gear and to the studio, which was really quite spectacular and very inspiring for us, because it was a good combination. So yeah, it's a real mix. In answer to the question of like gearheads, there's a mixture of kind of interest in that stuff from the perspective of the band. Yeah.
Did you go into recording with more or less finished songs?
This time round, we worked and worked and worked and worked on the songs. Because I guess we're kind of like we're very diligent, and I think also when you kind of manage yourself and you're releasing your own music and you're funding yourselves, you're aware of the financial pressure on going into an expensive studio. So you're like, we're spending X amount a day to be in this studio. We want to know that we're going in there with songs that are ready to go and ready to record. So, you know, we went in very much with like, we'd done a lot of pre-production with Chris. We sent him all the demos and like he would provide feedback. We'd do the feedback. We'd send it back to him. He'd give more feedback. And the idea with this record as well was that we track a lot of it live. So we were kind of just rehearsing, drilling. So that when we got into the studio, the kind of bass layer was confident and solid. So, and again, like there, you know, there's always this tension between the artist that you are and artist that you wish you could be. And it's part of me would love to go into this, to a studio with just sketches and see what happens. But you know, there's always another album to make. So maybe next time. Didn't happen this time. It was very diligent this time. Yeah. It was like, we will have the songs as good as they could possibly be. We'll all play them incredibly and everything's going to be worked out before we go to the studio. So that was what happened this time around.
Okay. So when this one absolutely blows up and in 5 years, when you're done with the tour, you can spend a year in the studio, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And piss everyone off, because actually this was, we found the formula that worked, you know. Change it up again.
Yeah. Now that you have your own label, I assume that you still do most of everything by yourselves?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Okay. I mean, this might be the most independent release so far, actually.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
And then, sorry, this was like we jumped topics and now I'm going back.
That's okay.
To the producer.
Yeah.
That was no just worries. A thought I had. So that now you have that, you have the baseline, then you get into the studio and then have it, did you meet beforehand?
Chris
beforehand, or was that just he came in with a suitcase full of cables and stuff was like, let's hit it, and like how did that actual getting into the studio and getting the work done, was that as you expected it to go? Was that completely different? Did you throw songs out, or were you able to just go for it?
In terms of meeting Chris, what happened was we played a gig in Switzerland, I think, and we were in the van driving back listening. I think we were listening to some of the demos from the record, and we were thinking to ourselves, who would we like to produce this record? And honestly, the first name that came up was Chris from Grizzly Bear, because we had just been fans of Grizzly Bear from such a young age. And we always knew that Chris produced them. And like, he just was the kind of musician that when we were in our teens, we were all just wanted to be like Chris. He played like a million instruments. He was in a band. He produced the band. And the sound of Grizzly Bear to us was just so exciting. It was like, it was guitars, it was drums, it was voice. It was, you know, familiar instruments, but they sounded so otherworldly. So we were talking, we're like, oh, and also we loved his solo material. That's a solo moniker of Kant. And he'd also reworked some of Arthur Russell's music, and he'd also had a record label where he'd released Kieran J. Callinan, Solange, Moses Sumney. So we were just like, this guy is the coolest guy in the world. We need to work, you know, dream world. We would love to work with him. And then I sent the demos to his manager, and I, as the manager of the band, I'm constantly sending the music to people, and you know, just on a wing and a prayer most of the time. Very rarely so people reply to me. Yeah, no one replies to me, and sometimes I pretend that I'm not the singer in the band and that I'm a quote unquote manager and whatever, like, you know, just stuff like that. And I'm doing it all the time, and most of the time, you know, 90% of the time, probably people don't reply. But this time, the manager replied and said, Chris likes the demos, you know, and he'd be interested in working with you guys. And then followed a period of like a few months where I knew he was interested, but we couldn't quite nail the dates down. And he was in Barcelona and, you know, he was obviously working on other projects. And my brother at the time was doing a course in Barcelona. And I went out to visit him, and I messaged Chris saying, like, just so you know, I'm in Barcelona, I'd love to hang out. I went to his studio and we talked about the music. I played him some more demos. And and what's funny about that moment was I was so nervous to go and play him the music that, like, I don't know, on the way up, he lives in this incredible part of Barcelona, like up in the hills. And on the way up in the taxi, I was really nervous, man. And I started feeling sick. And you know when your brain then just starts kind of G-ing you up, and it's like, oh, you're gonna throw up. You're gonna throw up at this, in this, any second now. And I just remember sitting in his flat, in his house, sorry, just kind of in my head being like, don't throw up. Just keep talking, don't throw up. You just need to not throw up. I didn't throw up is probably the like disappointing conclusion of the story. No,
that's great. Nothing would be worse for a future working relationship.
Yeah,
just threw, I know, up on his carpet or something.
And he's the nicest guy as well. And so he was like, and so I kind of, you know, when sometimes you're like in your head, you're like, okay, well, I think I need to say that I'm not feeling very well. Maybe it'll help to like calm me down. So I made up that I'd had some like bad ceviche the night before. And I was like, I ate some dodgy ceviche last night, man. I think I'm just not feeling great. And he was like, do you want some of my homemade kombucha? Do you want some coffee? And I was like, I just need to drink my water and just to convince you that my band's not shit. And then I need to go. And thankfully, all of that happened. So long-winded answer to the question. We'd had a good build-up where I'd met him. He'd heard a lot of the music. He'd fed back on a lot of the music. We devised a kind of game plan as to like how we wanted to tackle being in the studio. And then we all met for like the first session in this studio called La Frette near Paris for a week to record four songs to sort of see how it went. It went really, really well. And then we did another 2 weeks, like later on.
Yeah.
And then we did a week at his studio in Barcelona to like put on the finishing touches. The other question you asked was whether any songs got ditched. The short answer is yes. there were ditch songs, quite a lot of them in the process for sure.
Okay, nice. That sounds all in all very wonderful. You got to meet heroes, you got to work with heroes.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
It was great. It was really great. And yeah, really, I mean, you know, it maybe sounds trite or something, but it really was the best, for me at least, the best musical experience I've ever had, just because it was like, obviously it's great working with someone who you really admire, but it's also that could end up being disappointing, or it could end up being not quite what you imagined. And actually what I think what I got from working with Chris and also working at La Frette, this studio, was just that kind of reminder of why it is that you make music and you're a musician, because to kind of have amazing experiences which open your eyes to new ways of doing things, where new relationships are created, where someone pushes you to try things in a different, you know, to play guitar in a different way, to sing in a different way, to record in a different way. It kind of gave the band all of those things. It was a very nourishing experience for the band and reminded us as to like why you make a band in the first place. I think nowadays it's very easy to get fixated on outcomes and like how things perform and, you know, are you making any money and all the rest of it. And actually the reason you make a band is to have an experience. And this third album, was a really amazing experience for all of us.
That's cool. And it feels mean to say this, but now you're in the promoting stage and the experience is over. And you have to think about outcomes.
Exactly. Yeah, it's terrible.
What is that? You said it's terrible. Is that what is that like? Do you say, okay, I take half an hour a day to think about it and then I do other stuff to stay sane? Do you email Spotify executives to get your songs on playlists? What
does it involve? Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. I think there was a time where like promotion was this. It was like doing interviews and talking to people. And all of the acts in the 90s and the 2000s complained a lot about it, didn't they? They didn't like doing interviews, the famous acts at least. And I don't know how they feel about that now, but I feel like they must look back on that time and be like, God, that actually doing interviews was great because at least I'm not making a fucking 15-second video for TikTok, you know? I think the way of promoting music now has changed so much. And it's so much more revolving around social media, where you kind of have to be your own PR person and spend. And I think what's difficult about that is you asked about the time, like how much do you give it? I think what's difficult about that is that is up to you, you know, like you have to set your own boundaries there. And of course, the downside of the previous model was that nothing was up to you. If you only got as many interviews as people who wanted to talk to you, you couldn't invent interviews, you know. I guess you could, but no one would probably read them or listen to them. Whereas now the promotion is much more in your control, which is obviously has its benefits, but the downside of that is you're like, well, where and how do I draw the line? And I think that's really, really difficult. And then on top of that, you asked about the more kind of strategic stuff, like, you know, getting into a Spotify playlist or whatever. That's one place where we do have a bit of help.
Yeah.
There's like a distributor who pitches to the playlists. But even then, someone has to write a pitch form, and that usually ends up being me. And yeah, it's a pretty soul-destroying exercise, man. Like, you get to the end and it's like, what if you could tick four moods that your music, that this song is like, what would you say they are? And it's, the moods are like chill, sexy, romantic, throwback. One is decades. I never really know what that one is. I never ticked that one. Maybe that would unlock a whole new sort of door of success.
No.
honestly it's awful, like this pitch form is really, that's really where the creative experience dies. And it's replaced by this much more I don't know what the word is, so a sort of soul destroying moment. But there's nothing you can do about it right now, really. I think about it every day, and I don't know necessarily what the solutions are. It's hard. It's really hard out there for small acts and independent acts right now. It's really tough.
I was thinking about that earlier today. At least you do have a Bandcamp, for example, which makes it easy for people to just give you money.
Yes.
Which is, lots of bands do not give you that possibility. Which I think is a missed opportunity.
I agree.
So, another two thoughts. One, because I remember last time we talked about books as well. And if you could
come, I remember along, you asked me. I remember you asked me about this. Yeah. Go ahead.
If you come across Mood Machine by Liz Pelly.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. I wrote my MA thesis I wrote my MA thesis on how I felt. It was called Quantified Creativity, a Study of Performance Metrics and Musicians' Creative Freedom. But I finished that paper like 3 months before Mood Machine came out. And it's like everything that my thesis was probably about was in Mood Machine. I have to confess that I have not yet read it, partly out of kind of bitterness.
Yeah,
but I was like, God damn, I wish that this had come out whilst I was writing my MA thesis. So I haven't read it yet, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. And it kind of, my understanding is that it is a book that explores how basically the Spotify as a platform is kind of, is harming creativity. Is that more or less the premise?
That is one part of it. Yeah.
Okay.
It is one of one of the first things that stuck with me was that they talk about how Spotify is an advertising company that shows music as the vehicle to get advertisement to people. Which kind of reframed the whole thing for me again, to not they're not there to save music, to do anything for artists or anything like that.
Mm.
And the other thing that I found really interesting is that together with Netflix and stuff like that, they more and more try to make things that are in the background. So if your music is foreground music, it does not work as well in Spotify as does background music.
And totally, yeah. There's this horrible expression, the lean back listener or the lean in listener.
Yes.
And the lean back listener is kind of being favored at the moment over the lean in listener. Because that music can just kind of sit in the background like a kind of, you know, soma pill from Brave New World. You know, you just kind of sit there, you know, you go to the gym, you're cooking or whatever, and this is just music that can kind of just sit in the background.
Yeah.
Or you're studying and you have like, what is it? Lo-fi beats to relax to, or concentration music, and it's like, you know.
Although that's also very interesting how the lo-fi beats to relax to started out and actually had different creators and stuff, and made them like the people who made the beats. They got to make a career out of that, and that has changed as well, because now everyone is doing it, and some of that is just AI putting a piano over an old school hip hop beat. So that has gone away again. But and now taking that, you having put your head into that particular hellhole to write about it, and then having spit it out as a song that also talks about like doomsday preppers and all of that. And then again, you in the press text, you talk about social media and all of that. How deep into the rabbit hole did you go, and how much of it came into the songs that are that are on the album?
I fell pretty deep, to be honest. It was when we were doing because we were finishing the record and I was writing the thesis at the same time. And I was in particular thinking about this incredible book that I read called To Be a Machine by Mark O'Connell.
Yes.
Which is all
it
about.
It is very good. Yes.
Have you read it?
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best books I've read for a really long time.
Yeah.
About transhumanism and people who believe in the singularity. But the thing I really took from it overall was, and I think this is why I love the book so much, was it felt like a very human perspective on all of that.
Mm.
Like it, and also it felt like it framed transhumanism and all of this kind of technological advance in the world and artificial intelligence and these crazy billionaires who are trying to kind of cryopreserve themselves and extend their lives for millions of years or forever or whatever, or upload their brains, upload their parents' brains. It framed all of that from this very human perspective of just like humans still can't come to terms with the fact or accept the fact that there is a gaping chasm in existence, which is like our brevity. And what do we do about that? What do we do about this kind of the existential human condition? We have religion, we create artificial intelligence, we're always trying to kind of like find ways around it. And I really liked how that book framed that. And that was kind of going through my mind all the time when we were making this record, was like, ways of kind of trying to, you know, dip and duck and dodge what I think is the essence of the human experience, which is just like, it's lack of meaning and it's brevity. And we're constantly trying to find ways of beating it or of ignoring it or of getting around it rather than just looking at it square in the eye. So Bird is an album, I guess, which is about finding freedom in doing just that, trying to kind of recognize just the present and who you are. Rather than trying to kind of like, look around it, dodge it, beat it. That book was very, very influential in a lot of the lyrics. And the Doomsday Preppers, Spit It Out is one of the more kind of angry songs on the record. That book comes up in the song Freeze My Soul, and Alka is the first line of verse two. Alka is the the cryogenics facility in Arizona. I think it was the first one and perhaps the biggest one. Read all about that in To Be a Machine.
Is Doomsday Preppers then from his other book, from Notes from an Apocalypse?
I haven't read Notes from an Apocalypse. But it sounds like I should.
It has Doomsday Preppers. It definitely does, which is why I had to think of it.
I mean, Notes from an Apocalypse, I mean, Doomsday Preppers was just in relation to the, I'm really fascinated by this idea that these guys who both, there's such a tension or such a kind of like hilarious opposition to their position, which is, I think, that they're simultaneously claiming to be the saviors of the world, whilst also simultaneously almost acknowledging the fact that they are also the architects of its demise. And, you know, the idea that like the guys who are just claiming that they have all the answers to the world's problems are huge doomsday preppers. They don't have the faith in their own inventions. That they're kind of like buying up land mass, like Sam Altman and Elon Musk are buying up these like huge land masses where they have bunkers. It just is so... It's so cognitively dissonant to me, and also something that should be quite enraging to the everyday person. That's what that song is exploring, I guess.
Okay. Excellent.
Notes on an Apocalypse. I'm gonna read that one. I love Mark O'Connell's writing, so yeah, I should read that.
I just checked that there's a third, like a newer book as well, but that is more specific about a single person. It's called A Threat of Violence. It came out in 2023.
Okay.
To Be a Machine and Notes from an Apocalypse are both very, very good books, and they have, at least the Granta versions have excellent covers. The other covers are good as well.
I have the Grant. I'm looking at it right now in my shelf. Grant, I have the Grant version. Yes, that's a good cover. You're right.
Okay, sweet. So there's 10 songs on the record. We've heard two of them.
You had two.
But there's still 2 months to go.
Yeah.
You're also playing some shows when the album comes out and around that.
Yeah.
Where you, in the round, basically, you look at each other or more at your instruments than each other, more or less.
Probably.
How do you... Real quick, how do venues react when you say, hey, we want to play in the middle of the people, please?
How do you think? They're overjoyed. They love it. No, they don't like it. No one in the music industry likes it when you try to do anything remotely different to the status quo. Some venues are more set up for it than others. Some don't like it. Promoters don't seem to like it a lot. It's not been the most popular tour to organize, I have to say.
Okay.
But it's a really fun show, and I think it's not just fun for us, it's fun for the audience too. The shows are going to be quite small, so you're much closer to the band, and you can see, especially with a band like us, where it's not just like people just strumming guitars for an hour. There's a lot of stuff going on that actually, when you're on stage, gets obscured, and it's quite fun to see it all in action and see all of the buttons and the kind of choreography of it. I think it's cool, but yeah, it's a challenge. I think sound is difficult, and I'm sure there's also like stuff that I haven't really engaged with about health and safety that venues get like quite upset about, but it hopefully will be worth it in the end. Be really fun.
You're not a hardcore show. No one is going to mosh into you, I assume.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think so.
There was an interview I did a while back where they talked about wanting to play a piano during the one of the tracks, and then they had the great idea to put the piano into the crowd, and then they had to actually make that happen. And it turns out it's not that easy to put a piano into a crowd during a show.
sounds incredibly dangerous.
So yeah, that is, I think they ended up just putting a keyboard into the shell of a piano.
Yes, people do that quite a lot.
To like have it actually have them be able to pick it up. Did we forget anything? Is there anything about the album, about the anything that is upcoming that is important that we should cover? Any ways to further support the band?
That's really kind of you. I mean, we will announce some shows in Germany, but just they're not announced yet. So we are going to do a European tour, including some German dates in, I think that's in October.
Okay.
But no, otherwise it's all wonderful. It's been covered. I'm excited about is for the full album to be heard, because it's not. I guess all bands always say this, or all artists always say this, that you know it's you've got to hear the whole thing.
Mm.
But I feel that more so with this record than I have perhaps with our previous records, that it's a good. It's a good chunk of music that, you know, I think deserves to be heard like as a whole. I think sometimes you can finish record like, yeah, there's like four or five really strong songs on here, and it's not that it's filler, but it's like you know that there are kind of four key songs. And actually with this album we found it really hard to pick out what the singles would be and how to tell the story of it. So I'm excited for you and whoever else to like hear the whole thing, because it's very varied, but it's got a good journey through it, and I'm excited for the whole album to be out. I'm frustrated that you've only had two songs.
I'm sure I really hope I did not miss the email, but I am sure the email will come soon enough.
Yeah, well, let me know if it hasn't, because then I'll send it to you.
All right. Okay, cool. Thank you so much for your time and for talking. And
no, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's really nice to chat to you.
Of course.
And great to get the recommendations, Notes on the Apocalypse. And also, you're now maybe the fifth person who's told me to read Mood Machine, and I think that is going to tip t- tip me over the line to buy.
Maybe do it after the record has released to make you still be able to engage with the things you have to engage with.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. If I do it now, maybe I'll just like turn. I'll just go off grid.
Yeah, yeah. No, that wouldn't be good. Okay, cool. Do you have a recording? Will you send that to Laura and then she will just forward it to me? Or
yeah, that's cool. I'll do it right now.
Sweet. Well, thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of the day.
And Lila, thanks so much, man. And appreciate you asking me to do this. And hopefully, whereabouts are you based?
I'm in Berlin.
Oh, great. So okay, maybe if we do the Berlin show, we can meet.
I will say hello this time, yes. I will get over my my introvertedness and make it to the merch stand to say a word.
Great. Well, I look forward to it.
Same. All right. Have a good one.
Take care. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Das war doch mal ein feines Gespräch an der Stelle. Vielleicht ist es euch aufgefallen, ein, zwei Mal hat es ein bisschen geknistert und irgendwo war auch wild was im Hintergrund los. Das tut mir leid. Beim nächsten Mal passe ich besser auf, wenn ich die Möglichkeit dazu habe. Also, das neue Album von Low Island heißt Bird. Das könnt ihr überall da kaufen, wo es gute Musik gibt. Zum Beispiel bei Bandcamp, da kriegen die wahrscheinlich das meiste davon ab. Es gibt auch eine Vinyl und so weiter, die gibt es in guten Plattenläden, entweder schon direkt oder zur Bestellung. Das entscheidet ihr bzw. der Plattenladen. Die Band ist im Oktober und dann auch im November in Europa unterwegs und spielt am 1. November in Berlin im Prachtwerk und am 2. November in Hamburg in der Nordwache. Geht da auf jeden Fall hin. Ich habe sie das letzte Mal live gesehen und war absolut begeistert. Das war mega, mega cool. Und ja, das Album auch richtig, richtig gut geworden. Alle weiteren Infos und ein paar von den Büchern, über die wir gesprochen haben, findet ihr in den Shownotes. Und da findet ihr auch das letzte Interview und alles andere, was es zu Dragon Seed Everything und All You Can Eat so gibt, findet ihr auf dragonseedeverything.com. Wenn euch das Ganze gefallen hat, wäre ich euch total dankbar, wenn ihr uns irgendwo 5 Sterne da lässt. Das wäre richtig, richtig cool. Ich nehme auch 4, weil wenn es zwischendurch mal geknistert hat, ist okay. Genau. Und ja, hier kommen Interviews, wenn wir sie gemacht haben. So ist das Leben. Lasst euch nicht ärgern. Bis bald. Alles, alles Gute und dann sehen wir uns spätestens im November beim Low Island Konzert. Bis dann.
I dedicate this program to the fight against crime. Not merely crimes of violence and crimes of dishonesty, but crimes of intolerance, discrimination and bad citizenship.
Good night and good luck.